on maynard.com.au. Hey, you! Welcome to Maynard's Malaise. Listener, we've got a very special episode for you today. As you've noticed, I take you for journeys through time very often, but this time I'm taking you for a journey through time and a journey in place. But let's start at the end with a quote from Dr. Evil, who says to Austin Powers,
"There's nothing more pathetic than an aging hipster."
And that's certainly what I feel like here as I stand between the Horden Pavilion and the Royal Hall of Industries, where for many years of my life, between 8 at night and, 8 in the morning or beyond, I had a fantastic time. And I'm with someone who's written a book using those years, collectively known as Club Horden, in the collective imagination of Australia, as a backdrop for that. Norman Fox. Hi, Norman. How are you?
Very good. Thanks, Maynard.
Just to sort of work out our difference in ages here, how old were you roughly when you were going to the Horden Pavilion and to all those parties back in the late 80s?
I can give you exactly as my character in my book is, 16 years old.
So for a start, you shouldn't have been there.
But no one seemed to mind. There was a surprising amount of 16-year-old high school students that we seemed to bump into and gravitate towards when we were out partying. It was becoming a bit of a competition of who could get in.
And you mentioned me in your book at a particular pivotal moment in the character's life. Let's just stand over the shade of one of the trees here. And we can't really get too close to the Hall of Industries or the Horden, not because of a restraining order that's been put on either of us.
There's an invisible dance party going on.
There's an invisible dance party. And it's funny, I'm looking there and I can see that full of people with the sun coming up.
Yes, I was there.
What part were you at where I was DJing and you had a bit of a moment?
That particular moment was to ABBA's Gimme, Gimme, Gimme a Man After Midnight, which is a bit of a metaphor for the whole book, Finding Ecstasy, the true story of a teenage closet case. That was a very euphoric moment for me.
And you decided to write a fictional book. You didn't decide to go for a non-fiction one of your own story.
Initially, I began writing this as a memoir, and then I decided that there were too many revealing details and I wanted to protect people who were involved in the whole going out to the Horden with me, and decided to write it as based on a true story. So it has been fictionalized. It blurs between reality and truth.
Now, a lot of people that are listening might go, oh, what a piker, but I would like to write the memoirs of my life, but I don't want my parents to read it.
Yeah, well, I haven't told my mum yet. She read the original memoir and said, oh my God, I don't want to have to relive that all over again.
When did these days stop for you?
Stopped right before the HSC. I just realised that the two were incompatible. So going out in that party lifestyle, especially as a young teenager, was taking an incredibly huge risk. I was quite serious about getting into a good career with my future, so I decided to just pull back in the year that I did my HSC. So when I turned about 17, had a few wake-up calls, basically put me on the path to go to university.
And those wake-up calls are in the book, because you do point out the downside of the party scene. And as I like to point out to people, I've had some of the best nights of my life partying away, and I've also had some of the worst nights of my life partying away. It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah. I don't think you can write a story about what happened at the Horden and outside the Horden without showing the positive and negative side effects and consequences. So I like to describe the book as a cautionary tale for young teens, and it's a sort of book that I wish was written when I was that age and going through that. You know, I wish there was more knowledge that we could have tapped into as teenagers.
I'm unaware of any other book using the Horden Pavilion dance party years as a backdrop, and I'm also unaware of any sort of coffee table book or non-fiction book about it. Am I just missing something?
No, you're not missing something. I think the closest we've come is the Powerhouse Museum Back to the 80s exhibition, and it did actually document a lot of the photos from the Horden Pavilion party posters, as you're wearing one of your t-shirts from that period today. Beyond that, I don't think there has been too much documentation of that particular part of Sydney history.
What are some of the parties you remember from the Horden years?
All of them, which is quite surprising, really. The first New Year's Eve rap party I went to at 88, 89, where Grace Jones infamously played very late at 4 a.m. We were some of the foolish teenagers that lined up on the night to get in when the last 1,000 tickets went on sale.
And the thing is, you could be in one spot, have come with a group of 20 people, watch people go past for hours and not see anyone you know.
but you'd make so many friends in the process.
And yes.
We would go on notorious meeting people binges. You know, people were quite relaxed, and we never got taken advantage of or anything sinister happened or anything like that.
Did you come here with the intent to find any sexual partners, or were you just on a general adventure?
It was all about the music, Maynard, which we have to talk about music. It was all about the dancing and just socialising.
Well, this is the thing that people say, oh, you know, oh, it's all about sex and drugs. Well, I don't know if the sex and drugs were the number one thing. They were certainly in your top five. They might even be number two and three. But you would come here and dance, and the music and sex and the people, and that list would be interchangeable. It would move back and forth.
The characters that I write about, they were very much there to dance because of their age. Mm. The character that I'm writing about was in the closet. So he was petrified of doing anything with a guy in front of his school friends. Mm. So that's where a lot of the drama in the story happens.
Mm. And did you get to go to many of the other traditional clubs around Sydney at the time?
Ooh, that's a loaded question, but yes.
Because I'm just wondering if you went to the site, if you went to the Mad Club on a Monday night, which I'm surprised how many...
That was a school night, Maynard.
Well, that's what I would have thought, but I'm surprised how many kids snuck out to come to the Mad Club on a Monday night and then sneak back in again. I wouldn't have done that when I was a kid.
Yeah, it takes a lot of balls.
Yeah. And what sort of music were you into? Was it mainly that straight house rhythm?
It was completely, well, you got us into disco, rediscovering Blondie, ABBA, Earth, Wind & Fire.
Yes, because the retro thing was burning very bright in the early 90s.
But what introduced us to house music was Inner City, Big Fun, Nina Cherry, Jack to the Sound of the Underground by Hit House.
Oh, that Italio house stuff that you just haven't heard since.
Yes.
Trying to obviously put a musical soundtrack to it. Did you go, Indian Minor Bird, go away. Go away, you. If you stay there long enough, we'll sample you. So did you like, oh, I'll put that song there and then you'd change it around. No, I think that song works better. How would you do that?
I actually remember the songs being at very specific parties. So it is, if we're going to turn this into a screenplay, we have the soundtrack ready-made.
It sounds like it would be a great idea for a screenplay as well. And I think Baz Luhrmann, if you're listening, what could be better? It's got the shows in the background. Were you able to describe some of the shows that they watched?
Very briefly. I kept a diary at the time of when all of this was happening, which is what the book is based on. So it's based on completely real events. The morning after, I would actually write down my memories of what happened because I was so excited by the whole experience and I tried to capture that feeling. Basically, that's where the whole novel has been born from.
It never occurred to me to actually write the stuff down.
Cheaper than therapy.
I was telling you that at one end of the Horton Pavilion here, where they had the men's toilets downstairs, for many of the parties, they used to actually have a DJ who just DJed in the men's toilets. I suspect Mark Allsop was probably one of those that did that. And you never availed yourself to that. But I imagine as a young 16-year-old that hadn't come out, perhaps that really wouldn't be your scene.
To be honest, because I was so intensely closeted, I'd always go to the toilets with the girls, in the girls' toilets, and hang out with the drag queens. That was a completely safe experience.
Go to the bathroom at the Horton Pavilion or the Royal Hall of Industries and you could, well, that could be where you'd be for the rest of the night, just talking to people, because you'd end up getting caught in conversations. Yeah. The only negative would be the incredibly bright fluoro light, which did not look good.
Not flattering. But yeah, I remember one particular party. We were there for at least an hour just chatting away with a group of drag queens and just having the time of our lives.
Now, here we have the area where I was pointing to the toilets. Oh, they're driving a huge forklift truck.
That reminds me of the Meltdown Sweatbox party, where they actually had earth-moving equipment on the dance floor, which came to life as the people danced.
You reminded me of that. You're right. Probably one of the best dance parties I went to. The rat parties were always good, but I think the Let Them Eat Cake party was spectacular, with parachute fabric everywhere. That sounds great, but when you think about it, What's one thing we know about parachute nylon fabric?
I'm stuck.
It would probably be one of the most combustible materials on Earth.
That's where I thought you were going, but I didn't want to go there.
Yeah, I mean, you would not be able to do that now unless you fireproofed all of the nylon. It would be like having a huge wad of pantyhose, and if someone happened to drop a match on it or something, or any sort of...
Or light up a cigarette, because this was the days where you could smoke within a public space.
That's right. During the Horden parties, you could smoke anywhere you liked. In fact, it was almost compulsory to smoke, even if you didn't.
And the other thing I remember about that particular party, there were some very bright lights from an SBS TV film crew that documented what was going on at the Horden.
Here's a call out to our listeners out there. We are both looking for an SBS documentary that started, I think it might have been hosted by George Denikian. He started it by looking at the camera and going, "Ecstasy is in Australia and it's killing our children." Something like that.
Yeah, I remember watching that fondly with my parents and and appearing on it on the right. dance floor and being very excited that I was on TV and then realising, oh, that doesn't look very good to my parents, does it? They're a bit like, you better not be taking out of that ecstasy. And I said, well, of course not.
So even if you didn't live through the Horden years, if you're reading your book, do you think it's going to read like complete fiction? Well, like, oh, come on, this could never have happened. Like people would read about Studio 54 now.
I'm going to find out. Like I said, it's based on a diary, so it's all based on completely real events.
And is there one particular chapter or scene that is your favourite? I always like ask authors that, because there's one section they might have laboured over, or there's one section that just ran like water through their brain and went straight to the pen.
The section that wrote itself was the second dance party we went to, which was happened to be the Black Party, which was, for those who don't know, was a gay and lesbian leather community event. And we were there to party hard and take drugs, basically. Mm. And we took no drugs that night because we were gatecrashing an annual gay and lesbian leather community bondage. Every outfit conceivable. We were in for the education of a lifetime. Forget high school.
Yeah. And so your mind was blown by what you were seeing. You didn't really need any additives. Well,
exactly. And we knew we were out of place. So it was one of those, it was just a hilarious moment where we're like, what the hell are we doing? And people were also quite bemused by the fact that we were there, I think.
And as we can see, we're outside the dome, or what used to be the dome, and we've got people there in their offices, in their little cubicles, working away, looking not too happy, hey?
That can happen when you're in an office job.
Let's talk about the music for a moment. We'll go over here next to what's now called the Hi-Fi, but I tend to remember this as the venue where they had many an Inquisition party. I still can't figure out why no one hasn't done this before. It's because it's such an obvious backdrop. Everybody seems to write or have a blog, yet no one's bothered to write even a non-fiction book about this. And I think a non-fiction book with a whole bunch of interviews and photos are something that's hard to find, because tell young people today that there wasn't everybody with a camera at one of these events and they won't believe you, would they, Norman?
For a young person to imagine a world without digital technology is just inconceivable. Mm. So,
and there was a solid rule at all of the Horden Pavilion parties that no cameras were allowed. And if you wanted to take a decent camera inside, you know, a 35mm SLR, they were kind of big and difficult to hide. There was a couple of official photographers, Maz Images being one of them and one of the most consistent. The information about this, the 20,000 people that would go to this would stay amongst those 20,000 people.
I mean, the marketing of those parties was all done through outdoor marketing. Billboard posters was how the word got out. Mm. Through Triple J FM, sometimes there was mention of the major parties, such as the Grace Jones rap New Year's Eve party and the Adiva rap party the following year. Mm. Yeah, it was all word of mouth. And that's why I think people thought that they were underground, even though if you can call 20,000 people or several thousand people every second weekend underground.
My breakfast show that came live from the rat party of Grace Jones. So it would have started at 6 a.m. on that morning in a caravan. And I remember we only got to do an hour or two of it because that's when it pelted down with rain. Do you remember the rain at the Grace Jones? Yes,
definitely.
It was torrential, wasn't it?
Kept us in the Hall of Industries for a little bit longer.
Yeah. And I remember doing a show there and we had to abandon it all and head back to the Triple J studios then in William Street. And I'm just wondering if there's a recording of that anywhere.
Maynard, you have to find that so you can document that and show the world. As Molly said, you've met him recently again. Do yourself a favour.
In fact, I'm sure there must be in the Triple J archives, although they are fairly patchy, there would have to be a recording of Grace Jones that went live to air that night. Someone must have been running a tape.
Good idea for one of the Rage Retro evening nights. My Jamaican guy. My Jamaican guy.
think I'm the only person ever to host Rage live, and I hosted Rage from a rat party at the Horden Pavilion over there, and I was going around on the dance floor talking to people and cutting to the film clips. I remember I spoke to Tim Ritchie, and that would most certainly be in the Rage library, and it would be one of the very, very early Rages within the first year of it starting. Even if they didn't show it in its entirety, I would love to see those links.
Somewhere in the archives of the ABC.
Oh, it's in there, don't you worry. Yeah, because they keep it all, but they don't always dig into it as often as they should. Let's talk about fashion. What would you have worn to one of these dance parties? Oh, maybe not your first one, because you weren't quite sure what to wear. But once you got the lay of the land, so to speak, what would be the way Norman Fox turned up at a dance party in, say, 1989 or 90?
Well, I hope I don't annoy my readers with mentions of Doc Martin boots, Doc Martin shoes, 501 jeans, white T-shirt, braces, bandana.
501 jeans are amazing because they were able to make even anyone with a small bum look like that huge ass, didn't they?
I was as skinny as a surfboard when I was a teenager, so...
it didn't matter.
The less I say about that, the better.
And what would you wear as a top again?
The tops generally came off because it got so hot.
Now, would you have gone with a hoodie? Because there were the fluoro hoodies at that time.
Even predating the fluoro hoodie, there was a bit of paisley action because, you know, it was 1989, it was winter, it was getting a bit colder, so paisley shirts started to come out a bit, I know.
Anything by Mambo. If it was a bit warm, you could wear your Mambo shorts, your Mambo T-shirt, and you just fit in.
Exactly. Mm. But yeah, it was very basic. I mean, very basic. And the bomber jackets were quite big as well.
Padded bomber jackets.
Thank you.
I still have my reversible Mambo bomber jacket, the one that's got like a thumbs up on one side and is black on the other. And I'm not going to give that away in a hurry.
Yeah, we actually sort of put a few slogans on the back of our bomber jackets and completely confused our other high school friends who didn't partake in going to the Horden on the weekend.
I think that's the police chopper. If they're checking us out, this would have to be the most obvious ecstasy deal that's ever gone down. Oh, no, I take that back. It probably isn't. I remember I used to see people...
My novel covers some very obvious ecstasy deals, and I think that's part of the amusing side of it, how readily available it was.
And there was no policing.
Not initially, but, you know, during the time that I went to the dance parties over that year, 1989, we did notice changes in the makeup of the crowd and the very obvious undercover police officers working the crowd.
That was so obvious.
I mean, it's a case of if someone's wearing a smiley face T-shirt, you knew they were undercover cop. Part of the reason why I wrote this novel, though, is also about harm minimization, because, you know, I totally acknowledge what we did as teenagers was very foolish, very risky. I mean, it was high-risk activity. And part of me being in the closet, I think, drove some of that behaviour, you know, wanting to escape, self-medicate. You know, as a high school student, I experienced a lot of bullying, a lot of homophobia. Going to the Horden was actually a real eye-opener for me because I suddenly saw all these same-sex couples that were comfortable, out and proud, and it was an amazing experience, but unfortunately for me it got a bit too clouded with the chemical substances.
We'll go out with a song here. If you had to pick one song, what do you think?
I think I'm going to go with Inner City Big Fun.
And let's paint a picture for people. You've got 10,000 people around you, you're putting your hands up in the air, and when the E was coming on, you would move your fingers and the fingers would all blur as if they were their own strobe. Is that the best way to describe it?
Look, everyone looked like they were famous and from TV. Everything became very beautiful all of a sudden.
And everything had a star filter on it. That's probably the best way, yeah.
Yeah, forget Instagram. We were doing it much earlier.
And you'd be dancing around and there'd be sort of a generic song and then you'd hear the... And then what would you do? Would you go, ah, would you make a noise?
I think we'd scream, but I just remember the dance floor getting incredibly crowded and suddenly there was no room to dance.
Norman, the book again is...
Finding Ecstasy, the true story of a teenage closet case.
And we can find it at?
You can find it at all good digital bookstores such as iBooks, Amazon Kindle and Kobo.
But you have a website as well?
Yes, www.findingecstasy.com.au.
And you'd welcome feedback from people who were there and maybe people who've got photos of themselves and that sort of thing. And up on your site, there are some photos and some videos that people can look at of the time. And, you know, you'd like a little bit of background so people can share in the joy.
You can't have a sensible discussion about drugs and dance party culture without actually dealing with the reality of it and the motivations why someone would go ahead and do it. So the website is very much geared to setting the scene.
And if you were at the scene back then and you haven't revisited your photos and what you were wearing at the time for a while, can we say that they're in for a shock?
I wouldn't change a thing.
Let me take you to a place I know you wanna go. It's a good life.
on maynard.com.au. Hey, you!